Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, today is the third Monday of the month when we typically explore business and career issues. And we're going to begin today's show with Dr. Bill Nouse, who has some powerful psychological strategies for getting the job you want. We'll talk about overcoming procrastination, worry, self-doubt. We'll look at how to get into the mind of your interviewer and how to close the deal and land the job. This is a really great book, and I know very timely for many people. And we'll end today's show with a man who's created a very unique career for himself. He's a Presbyterian minister who started a foundation to minister to atheists, and he's a paranormal writer. He actually just wrote his first novel. It's just been released. Time magazine raved about it. It's about, loosely, the stories about where the church meets the paranormal and magic head on. And we'll be talking with him toward the end of the show. And in between that, I'm going to talk to you a little about the Alive Expo, because we spent the weekend down there this weekend. I think I'm talked out because I can't talk properly this morning. But we met lots and lots of listeners, and it was really fantastic experience to meet everybody. So I'll be sharing some of that in the middle of the show, and we'll actually hear from some of them who actually talked on mic to me. So let me introduce my first guest to you. He is Dr. Bill Nouse. He's a licensed psychologist in Massachusetts. He specializes in personnel selection, productivity, anxiety treatment, and frustration tolerance training. And together with, three other people, he has co-authored this book called Fearless Job Hunting, Powerful Psychological Strategies for Getting the Job You Want. Bill Nouse, welcome to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is a really good book. It's different in that you do apply psychological strategies to the job search. So tell me a little bit about that, why you approached this. I know you're a licensed psychologist, but why did you think it was important to put psychological strategies in this book?
Because 80% of job searches largely are psychological, and that includes even the creation of resumes, interviewing, making contacts with the people who could point you in a direction for getting a job. And most people who write books on this topic and speak on the topic largely just focus on how do you write a resume, can you come up with good answers to questions, and so on. But when you look at really what goes on, most of the things that people deal with are psychological. In other words, getting up and getting going, avoiding procrastination, learning how to roll with the punches, getting back up, making a good rebound after things haven't gone so well, and knowing how to get things going and recognizing the numbers aspect of a job search. So mainly if you know the psychology, know how to communicate effectively with impact, understand what the pitfalls are, know how you can get in your own way, how you can get out of your own way.
That's important.
So it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. And you start with prepping yourself a positive action. I mean, preparation is key. And you talked in an article I read about, you've written a lot of articles and blogs, but you talked about preparation being one of the key things in there. I wonder if we can just talk a little bit about that. How do we get in the right mindset and get ourselves prepared for job searching? And we might have a job, we might just want a promotion, right? We might want to get a better job, or we might be out of work looking. So what are some of the steps we need to take on that, Bill?
Well, the first is I think you get your finger right on the pulse, which is the right mindset. If you start off let's take the opposite. Let's suppose you start off with a mindset where you're likely to shoot yourself in the foot. What is that likely to be like? Well, one is you probably tell yourself the job market is too difficult, too hard, I won't succeed, why try? And that puts you right on the slippery slope to procrastination. You might believe that you have to be utterly perfect in everything you do in order to get a job. Perfectionism is a real productivity killer. You could believe that the world owes you something, and so all you need to do is present yourself and the red carpet rolls out, that can be very self-defeating as well. So part of the right mindset is avoiding negative self-defeating ideas, and like you're powerless to do anything about making any changes in your life, when in fact, if you can just tie your shoelaces, you know, you aren't that way at all.
Right.
The attitude that isn't necessarily easy, but it's far easier than the alternative, is that of a optimistic realist, a realistic optimist, which is that you can see that a job search is a numbers game.
Okay.
That there are certain skills you acquire along the way. It's going to take some practice. You can't win them all. But that gives you sort of a sense of realistic enthusiasm as you go forward, because you're not going to be binding yourself to ill-fitting beliefs that are likely just to be like a lodestone on your back.
Right. So taking a very professional approach to this, really, just as though we were going to do a job. I mean, job searching is a whole job in itself, isn't it?
Absolutely. In fact, the people who I think, in fact, I know, generally do much better in getting jobs sooner rather than later are people who treat it as a full-time job. You know, they plan out what they're going to do, they have a schedule, and they treat it like a full-time job. And the better, the people who actually do better are the ones who treat it as a double-time job, and they dedicate themselves to that. And as a realistic optimist, they know that in this current job market, you have to face certain realities. You have 14.9 million people who are officially out of work, and another 6 million or so who are underemployed or dropped off the rolls entirely. You have about 2.9 million jobs that are available. So you have a lot of people chasing fewer jobs. And it depends also on your area. If you're a physician just graduating from medical school and you finish your residency, don't sweat finding a job. Just figure out which one you're going to take. If you're a truck driver, you may find that a little bit more difficult because you know, fewer goods are being shipped, fewer truck drivers are needed. If you just get through law school, you know, your prospects are about average or so. And if you're a go-getter, you might do a little bit better. And if you're waiting for something to fall in your lap, you probably won't. So those are sort of considerations that you put into your planning. And other considerations are, you know, when you go fishing, you go for where the fish are. You don't go fishing in a swimming pool, for example, because your odds aren't all that very good. But the
right.
Government has some kind of neat websites that are free. One is bls.gov/OCO.
Can you say that again? I didn't quite catch the beginning
sure.
of it.
bls.gov/OCO. And what that does is it brings you to a site where you, if you're thinking about making a career shift, you find what the perspectives are for the future for, let's say, lawyers, let's say, truck drivers, let's say, plumbers, physicians, whatever it may be. They cover a lot of ground. So you have at least, if you say, gee, I always wanted to be this, and you really have a passion and the prospect isn't very good, passion wins out over numbers every time. I've seen people who just really loved a certain area, and they dug into it, and the chances weren't very good, but they made the chances work for them.
Yeah.
Another is just bls.gov, and what that does is it gives you some ideas about where to look for a job. For example, if you like, maybe you don't like it, maybe you will, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska, they have a 95% plus employment rate. Texas is on the rise, as is North Carolina, as is Illinois.
Do you happen to know where Washington is on that scale?
Washington, the state of Washington?
Mm-hmm.
So-so.
Yeah.
It's better than California and Nevada, but it's got its problems. But I could actually let you know, because I just so happen that I have the regional employment and unemployment survey right in front of me.
I've just been to a couple of events lately over the past couple of months, and I was surprised by the number of people that are still looking for work. And, you know, some very experienced people who've worked hard all of their life and are still looking.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the sad part of the current recession is of the people who are out of work, 31% have been out of work for over a year.
Wow.
And older workers in their 50s who really have the experience tend to have a harder time because the complaint will be, well, you know, you're overqualified. I think there's a good response to that, which is that is true. I am overqualified. On the other hand, how often do you get to have somebody with my level of skill at a cut rate?
Right.
So a lot has to depends on basic attitude. I'm looking at the regional stuff. Washington State. I'm surprised it doesn't come up on the numbers.
Okay.
But that's...
Well, maybe we can take a look at that in the break. But
sure.
Passion. You talked about passion earlier, and I wanted to go back to that because when somebody is, you just mentioned the number of people that have been out of work for a year. When somebody's been looking that long, you talked in another article about the three D's: despondency and something and depression. I think, but it can be very hard.
Despondency, disappointment, and depression. Probably.
There you go. Those were the three D's. So it is. It's sometimes very hard for people to sustain that passion and the level of confidence. So I wonder if we could talk on that a little bit. How we can, what are some of the psychological strategies we can apply to keep our confidence levels up?
Sure.
And why don't we take a break? And then I'm looking at a new clock here and it threw me off, but let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about those issues, okay?
Sure thing.
My guest today is Dr. Bill Naus, and he's written a really good book. It's called Fearless Job Hunting, Powerful Psychological Strategies for Getting the Job You Want. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
I'm going to go back to the house, hear that woman's mouth, rich and crying, tell me that I'm lying about a job that I never could find.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150. Coming next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, we'll talk with Marilyn Mellows, frontline series producer of God in America. We'll also check in with Environmental Magazine editor on tips for green gifts for the holidays. Find more information and listen to past shows at conversationslive.net. Join us next Monday at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate, making a difference, one word at a time.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back. Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Bill Naus in this segment. He's written a new book with three other co-authors, and I should mention their names, Sam Klarik, I'm probably butchering his name there, Russell Greger, and Nancy Naus. Is that your wife, Bill?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, they're all highly qualified PhDs. Bill himself is an EDD. And we're talking in this segment, of course, about fearless job hunting, powerful psychological strategies for getting the job you want. And I wanted to look at how we keep our confidence levels up. You talked earlier, Bill, about passion. You know, the people with passion are the ones who get the job. Because there is a spark that people give off when they're passionate about something. But if you get into that mode of feeling you're going through the motions, that can be, first of all, self-sabotaging and can also demean your confidence, can't it?
Sure. It becomes one of the vicious circles that we all hear about. You have a belief that you're not going to be able to succeed, so why try? You don't try, you fulfill the prophecy. It's just kind of a nasty, ugly thing to go through. And a lot of people do, because if you look at the numbers, for the first 9 months or so, people progressively get to feeling worse and worse and more miserable, until it at that point it tends to level off to a steady state of misery. And the question is, how do you bypass that or avoid it entirely? And part of it is it lies with the one area that we have an enormous amount of control, and that's how you think about things, how you perceive, how you define, how you judge. And most people don't think about their thinking, and as a result, what they do is they repeat patterns. For example, if you thought that you have no choice but to languish in misery over a job loss, that you can't make a comeback, and that you have to wait for a job to fall back onto your lap, then that's a confidence breaker. But it depends on how you look at things. For example, the psychologist William James in the early 1900s described a story of four people visiting Paris. One went there because they were interested in art, and so they saw art everywhere. One went because they had a business arrangement, and they saw business opportunities everywhere. One went there sort of because that individual had to, but then thought that Paris was full of thieves and saw thieves everywhere, and then closeted himself up in his hotel room and did very little at all. So how you view things can make a difference.
Right.
If you believe that you can, over time, succeed, but that it is going to take time and you just don't have it marked on the calendar when this is going to happen, it's pretty open-ended. But what you do have control over is when you start, your degree of persistence, and your attitude. And the attitude is that, hey, as a realistic optimist, it's a numbers game, I'll keep at it. And as a developmental thinker, that's another useful concept. What you can do is keep refining and improving. And over the course of a job search, the most important thing you're likely to learn isn't so much how you go about getting the job, although that is the big payoff, but rather skills that you can carry with you for the rest of your life. For example, if you recognize consistent errors in your thinking, such as you have to be perfect before you can search for a job, and you learn to give that up, you're probably going to find that your life is going to be a lot more comfortable. And that idea that you don't have to be perfect, but you can do well, and you can stretch, will carry you over the rest of your life. And it makes for a much more interesting autobiography than being stuck on a log somewhere thinking you can't do anything.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. I want to get into this because I think this, again, this I've heard from people, and I myself have interviewed thousands of employees over the years, in my former life in the corporate world. But you hear this from them that when they are, or you notice at this, I think, when you're interviewing, that when they've been searching for a job for a long time, people sometimes can just tend to clam up at interviews because they think they get into that what's the point thinking, I'm going through the motions here. But you have a great section in the book called Interview the Interviewer. And I remember many years ago, I hired my assistant, not because she was the best qualified person that I'd talked to, but because she did one heck of a job interviewing me. I felt as though I'd been almost the interviewee at the end of it. And we worked together very successfully for 8 years because she took the time to make sure that as much as I was taking the time to make sure she was the right assistant for me, she took the time to make sure that I was the right person for her to work with. So can we look at some of the questions that when the interviewer turns those questions over and say, what questions do you have for me? What's going to put interviewees ahead of the pack?
Well, being able to, if you've done your preparatory work about the organization, which is important, you've gone into whatever literature you have at the library, or you've gotten a hold of, if it's a larger company, it's a newsletter, and you've looked at its products, and you've taken time to study that, and you've talked to people about the products, so you have a really pretty good understanding. You know what the company's finances are. So when you're in the interviewer, in an interview situation, it's very important for you to know that the job that you're seeking is the job that's right for you. You've probably already decided the company is fine because you've done some research. But by asking questions about what new products are coming online, what type of opportunities are there for growth and development within the company, Those are questions which are more oriented towards look at the organization as a potential place of working, as opposed to, you know, what are my benefits? Will I get a corner office and so on and so forth? When I used to do quite a bit of assessing for employees for a corporation, and as soon as someone came in and told me about where they would like to have their car parked, where their office was going to be, I listened politely for a short while and then and thanked them. That was
right,
about it.
Right.
You might not even go for a luncheon interview at that point.
Right.
So the questions about that are relative to the company and its organization, its functioning, its people, its future are highly relevant. And you want to know those answers because you don't want to come in on something that's likely to be short-term. That could deprive you of something else. Now, in this kind of market, you may go along with that because the old saying goes, any port in a storm, you could always find something later. But there are jobs out there, and if for those who are willing to put the time in and ask the right questions,
right,
they can find them. And as with you, asking questions about the organization, which are relevant, It sends out an entirely different signal than somebody who's trying to sell themselves consistently and pressing and pushing. That can be real tiresome very quickly because the interviewer is going to figure, well, look, if the individual is doing this with me, imagine whether or not this would be a real party crasher in an office setting where, you know, they're continually focusing on me, as opposed to working cooperatively with the people in the organization.
Yeah. One question that I think is very revealing, if you're being interviewed yourself, is to ask the interviewer, if I were to get this job, and what would success look like? What would be some indications that I was successful? And what kind of qualities and strengths and weaknesses did the person in the job have before? Because I think that's very revealing.
Sure. And I think that would, one is it shows that you thought things out. Two, if you've done some additional preparation work, you've looked at your own strengths, your weaknesses, your limitations, your opportunities. When you ask that question, the feedback that you're going to get is feedback that you are prepared to respond to if there's a question asked. For example, a quick question would be, yeah, these are the qualifications, the strengths and the weaknesses of who might be your predecessor. And now, how would you fit on these scales?
Right.
And if you come up with something that's just not a kind of a carte blanche, quick off-the-cuff answer, but one that's been thoroughly thought through because you've taken the time and you've taken the steps to take a closer look at yourself and what your strengths and your abilities are, then I think the odds are that's going to ring true and ring authentic, which is different than trying to come up with the right answer to the question so you can persuade the interviewer.
Yeah.
This is not a contest, as you're going to quickly find out, and the points you make could be the points that you lose.
Yeah, and if you sense that the interviewer has an objection, you know, they're sometimes silent, that objection, but you can sense that they're not quite sold on you or they're not quite convinced you're the right person for the job, it's perfectly okay to address that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Based on what you've seen so far, what attributes or qualities would you like to see in me that could translate into success on the job?
Mm-hmm.
Because the interviewer doesn't really want to hire somebody that's going to end up a turkey. They may end up having to come up with an excuse to give them a Peter's principal promotion, move them off into the side. You can only do this so often, and then your own credibility is under question. The interviews themselves are generally, they don't necessarily pick the best people, interviewers, and the empirical evidence pretty soundly supports that. But they are very good at cutting people out who probably aren't going to work very well in the organization. So the more you can create conditions for the interviewer to ask you questions where you're prepared to answer, that gives you a psychological edge over somebody who just comes in and flies by the seat of their pants and ends up landing on their tail.
That's very true. And also, a lot of interviewers aren't very good at interviewing. So we're almost at the end of the segment, and I want to get this in, Bill. How do we close a deal? How do we get this deal closed?
Okay. Well, there's You know, how do you do it without being pushy, but at the same time being assertive? And if you don't want to put somebody on the spot because they'll yes you this or whatever. And as you say, not all the interviewers are that effective, and not all of them have a great deal of confidence, and some become threatened. And so, how you manage the exit is important. I might ask, you know, how many more people do they anticipate interviewing? When do they anticipate making a decision? But I think the more important thing is, would they have any objections to you're sending in some supplemental information based on the interview? And they might ask, for example, because that's an obvious question to ask, and say essentially about your educational skills and requirement. You don't want to take up any more of their time because you know it's pretty valuable. But there are some things that you'd like to add to it, and things about your job. And also, you'd like to be able to talk a little bit about walking them through the paces of some of the problems that you solved and how you went about doing it, and wonder whether or not there might be any opportunities for you to come in and actually demonstrate those skills. So it moves from talking about to actually showing. Now, the likelihood is that they're not going to say do this for insurance reasons or any one of a number of different reasons. On the other hand, if you're willing to commit to coming in and actually demonstrating skills, that suggests to an interviewer that you have skills to demonstrate. That could knock you up a couple of notches.
Yeah.
And no guarantees, because there is no guarantees in life about almost anything, and what might work in one circumstance might not work in another. But I can tell you from my experience, if somebody willing to do that, I'd certainly be willing to give them much more consideration than somebody who's just there because they're going through the paces because they want a job. This shows intent. It shows a willingness to take an extra step. It shows an attitude that I think I would like.
Yes, definitely. A great note to end this segment on, Bill. This is a great book that we've only touched. I mean, we haven't even touched the surface, really. There's a lot of really great information in here, including how to negotiate a contract once you're offered a position. The book is called Fearless Job Hunting, Powerful Psychological Strategies for Getting the Job You Want. And Bill, you did look up the status of Washington jobless, and we didn't fare very good with the rest of the country, but there are jobs out there in Dakota, right?
Yes, there are. You know, anywhere you look, you're going to find a job. And if other people who are not listening to the show are discouraged, despondent, and depressed over the prospects, that means that a good part of the people who would ordinarily be looking for a job aren't necessarily looking very hard. And the person who looks harder is likely to find one quicker.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us today, Bill Nass. Appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure.
And again, Bill's book, Fearless Job Hunting, he's co-authored this with three other PhDs. It's Powerful Psychological Strategies for Getting the Job You Want. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
22 grand job in the city, it's all right. 22 grand job in the city, it's all right. 22 grand job in the city, that sounds nice. It's all right, it's all right. In the city, it's all right. 22 grand job.
If you missed the show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Looking for unconditional love? An exercise buddy or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicky St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicky asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? tune in to our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com. That's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I just wanted to talk about the Alive Expo a little in this segment. First of all, I want to bring Eric Ryder on and wish him a belated happy birthday. You had a birthday this weekend.
I did. Yeah, thank
and
you very much.
What did you get up to?
Well, I went and saw...
Or maybe we don't want to know.
Nothing that insane. I went and saw the comedian Louis C.K. on Friday night at the Moore Theater, and it was extremely funny, as I had hoped, and went out with some friends for dinner and drinks before that. I had a great time. And let's see, on Saturday night, I went and saw a show at Chop Suey, this group called the Brand Flakes that are... like performance
brand flakes.
Yeah, it's crazy performance art, fun stuff, and they have like people dressed up like squids and karate experts and various things, and they all dance around to the music, and it's just a lot of fun, and they give out like big blue heads that you can put on and foam fingers and stuff. So it was quite a lot of fun. And went to ice cream before that. My favorite ice cream place is Full Tilt in White Center or Columbia City. And they have...
And where? Where's Columbia City?
Well, that's South Seattle.
Oh, okay.
As is White Center. They actually have some very interesting flavors. I tried absinthe ice cream for the first time and was quite impressed with it.
I've never tried that.
Neither had I.
Isn't that aniseed flavored?
It is, yes.
See, I wouldn't like that. But I'm glad you enjoyed it.
It was delicious. They also have like chocolate peanut butter and stuff like that. But they also just do some random, really interesting flavors that they all make there. And they make their own waffle cone. So I was in heaven. Plus, they have the vintage video games. So I probably played about 2 hours of Ms. Pac-Man. And so, yeah, I had a good time. It was like a flashback to my youth,
for sure. I was going to say, ice cream and Pac-Man. We went back to, how old were we?
Definitely back to my childhood.
Back to well, that's good. That's always good stuff. You know, it's good stuff. Well, I had a great weekend. We were at the Alive Expo, obviously, with other KKNW hosts, and we really had a good time. We did a live radio broadcast on Saturday where Eric Creamer, the station operations manager, and Benny interviewed the hosts that were down there, and that was fun. I
heard that it went really well.
It did. I actually had, probably a half dozen people who were listening to the live broadcast at home and grabbed their car keys and came down to the expo because of that.
That's awesome.
And that was just me. So, I mean, I'm sure other people heard it and came down, regardless. So, but yeah, there were a lot of listeners down there, and it was really nice to meet people and actually put faces to the people who are listening out there. And, I just really enjoyed the whole experience. And we were sorry you couldn't be there with us.
Yeah, I was a little bit sorry that I missed out on that as well. But, I had a good time with my stuff too. So
yeah. And I actually got the opportunity to talk with some of our listeners. I talked with so many people I can't even remember. But, I can remember them, but I can't remember everybody's name because there were so many of them. But Nick and Donna and John and Gavin and David and Ray and Melanie, Vicky, Donna, Sarah, Wendy, the list goes on. And it was just really cool to see everybody and hear what they like about our show in particular and like about KKNW in general. So I really appreciated that. And we're going to play a couple of clips. I took my traveling gear with me. I took my field gear with me and chatting with a couple of people. And we have all of these except Stephanie's, right?
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
So we can play Stephanie's later because it did not get emailed the way I should have done it. So we're going to listen to Helena and Diana Jones and Vicky Wells right here now. So I'm talking with a listener here. Tell me your name.
Helena.
And what brings you down to the Alive show today?
Well, I've always been a very healthy, conscious person, and I just like to take care of myself and the environment, and so I wanted to see what this was all about.
And are you enjoying it?
Oh, it's fantastic. Yes, I love it.
Are you a you're a KKNW listener? I know that because we've already talked. Tell us what you like about the station and our show.
Well, there's just so many different topics that you don't hear about on regular radio stations and or TV for that matter. So first thing in the morning when I wake up with KKNW. And I just, one after the other, we just have all these wonderful speakers on, and I just really learn a lot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
I certainly will. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here with, tell me your name.
Diana Jones.
And what brought you down today?
Oh, we're members of the Soul Spa, so we had to come down and see Rob and Alexis, but I come to this KKNW booth and I just want to stand on the outside and do the Wayne's World. I am not worthy because all of my stars are here. It is so cool. It is so cool.
Well, we appreciate you being with us. And I was trying to get your lovely daughter here to speak, but she doesn't want to, does she?
I don't know if she's going to talk or not. Would you talk to us, Cole? Yeah.
No. Are you going to talk to me? Go on. Just say hi. Say hey there. Hey there. No. She's suddenly gone shy. Well, we appreciate you being here today. So tell me, what's the best thing about KKNW?
The new thought. The conscious raising of thought.
Perfect. Thank you. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks. Thanks, Vicky.
So I'm here live at the Alive Expo with Vicky Wells. She's a listener of Conversations Live, KKNW. And?
Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
And what, you work at Boeing, Vicky?
Yes, I work on the Boeing Business Jets program. For 32 and a half years I've been there.
You deserve a medal, I think.
Thanks.
And what brought you down to the Live Expo today?
Actually, I heard the live interviews by Benny and Eric Prima of some of the KKNW shows here, and it inspired me. I listen to KKNW every chance I get, and it's just the most inspirational thing I can do for myself each day.
Wow, I feel like I should pay you.
Oh, I enjoy it so much. Thank you. I wanted to stop by and thank you guys for what you do.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you. And it's really great to be down here today and meet people in the flesh so we can put faces to who's listening. And final word before you leave us.
Oh, well, just thank you for everything. And I look forward to hearing as many of the great shows on KKNW. And I only get to hear you when I'm driving around in my car. And it's just uplifting. Thank you.
And those were just a few of the members I talked with yesterday and the day before, Saturday. But you know what? You're all shy. I couldn't believe how shy everybody was. I tried to get many people to talk on mic, and they said to me, I'm shy, or I'm very private. I said, well, I'm private too.
Did you say you could use a different name or nobody's going to know?
Yeah, but you know what? You have to also respect people if they don't
Absolutely.
Want to do that. But I was just, they were glad to be there, and we were glad to see them and hear them and talk to them. And at least we did get some people to speak. And so that was great. And, you know, the thing that I constantly asked everybody is, what kind of topics do you like to hear on Conversations Live? And a lot of people really enjoyed the variety of subjects that we talk about here and the different kinds of guests that we have on the show. And I encourage anybody listening today who didn't come down to the expo or maybe was too shy to come up to us and talk, you know, email me or call me and let me know what kind of topics you like. And I think we've got one more lined up here. Stephanie Stevenson, is that correct?
That's right.
All right. And then we're going to go to break afterwards, and we'll bring on our last guest of the day. And His name is Jonathan Weyer, and as I said at the beginning of the show, he's a Presbyterian minister who ministers to atheists. He's set up a special operation, but he's also a first-time novelist, and he writes about the paranormal and magic. Kind of an interesting career that he's built for himself, so we'll talk with him to end the show. Please stay with us. Okay, so I'm here with another listener. Tell me your name.
Stephanie Stevenson.
And Stephanie, it's great to actually meet you. You've been listening for a long time to Conversations Live and KKNW, right?
Yes, I have.
And so tell me what you like most about it.
I love the positive energy. I like the diversity of all the shows. I love your show because you bring on all sorts of different guests with different topics. And I always learn something from your show and your guests. I like listening to them over and over as well, so I pick up more.
Oh, good. So you listen to the podcast on the website, too?
Or the rebroadcast as well.
Oh, that's right. We rebroadcast on Friday night. So,
yeah.
Well, I appreciate you stopping by today. It's lovely to meet you and put face to our listeners.
It's a pleasure to meet you, and I'm just so thrilled.
Have a great time here.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com. And if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce@joycechapman.com.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Well, in our last segment today, we're talking with Reverend Jonathan Weyer. He's an editorial contributor for TAPS Paranormal Magazine, the Atlantic Paranormal Society, which is also known for the hit TV series Ghost Hunters. He lives in Columbus, Ohio, with his wife and three children, and he is a first-time novelist. I'm going to bring him on, and let's share his journey in his own words. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Vicki, it's great to be on.
Now, tell me how we say your last name. I probably butchered it.
It's actually Wire.
Wire, yeah.
Yeah, like telephone wire. Yeah.
Okay, it's W-E-Y-E-R, Jonathan Weyer.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, you are a young reverend.
Yes.
In the Presbyterian Church, as I understand it.
That's right, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that and what you do.
Well, basically, I'm a campus minister at Ohio State. And I started about 3 years ago working on campus with students who were questioning their faith, or struggling with their faith, and then outreaching to atheist groups to begin conversations between Christians and atheists. So that's been going on for about 3 years now. So it's kind of resulted in me being on the Secular Student Alliance Speakers Bureau, which is sort of the campus group for atheists. They have an international groups all over the country. In fact, that's why I'm coming to Seattle on Thursday, is to speak to an atheist group at Cascadia. So that's actually what's bringing me.
I want to ask you a question on that. Atheist groups? I didn't realize they had atheist groups, but do atheist?
Oh, there's plenty.
Do
yeah.
atheist groups invite you to talk to them, or do you reach out to them to try and talk to them?
At first, it was kind of a mutual discussion, and now. The Secular Student Alliance is the, like I said, they have campus chapters all over the country. They have invited me to be on their speakers bureau. I'm the only Christian reverend to be on their speakers bureau. And the way it works is their campus, a campus group will ask for me to come out, and the Secular Student Alliance will pay for me to come speak as long as I waive a speaker's fee and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, So that's kind of how it works. So I basically go to their groups. They don't necessarily come to mine.
Mm-hmm. Now, why go into the ministry? What was it that drove you to do this kind of work?
Yeah, you know, obviously, being in the ministry, you know, you feel a call from God, and then you also want to help people and love on people. And I think that's the two basic reasons people get into ministry, and they're certainly are mine. You know, early on, I pastored a couple of churches and that kind of thing, but I found campus ministry kind of to be more my speed.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have written another book. You've written a book before this, and I believe that was for atheists, right?
Well, actually, that one has just been finished. It's about my time hanging out with atheists at Ohio State. And
okay.
So that'll be shopped, hopefully, at the beginning of January. I just picked up an agent for the faithful and this book, as a matter of fact. So hopefully soon people will be able to read that particular book. But it's more of my story about being with atheists. And hopefully it's Christians and atheists alike will like it, because it more tells a story. It's not not necessarily apologetic for Christian faith, or it's not a, you know, here, atheist, this is what you should believe. It's more of, more of my personal story.
Right. So your novel, you've written a novel. This has just been released. It is called The Faithful. But it begins with the sentence, "I don't know if I believe in God anymore."
I try to be as provocative as possible.
Now, is this an experience that you, how much of you is in this book, if anything?
I'd say there's as much of me in the book as much as Stephen King when he writes about writers in mm-hmm. his book. You know, there's certainly some ministerial experience in there. As far as, you know, a crisis of faith, I don't think mine has ever been as extreme as Aiden's in the book. But
and
he's
your protagonist.
Yeah, he's my main character. So, you know, my struggle has always been what brand of Christianity do I identify myself with? You know, I try to put some of that struggle into the Aiden's struggle to see if make it seem more believable. But, you know, being a minister, I have enough minister friends who've gone through crisis of faith and again, gone through crisis of my faith of my own. So it made it easier to write about, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that a little. When you have gone through a crisis of your own, how have you got through that?
That's a great question. You know, I think it comes from, you know, our crises of faith are always intellectual and they're always emotional. Sometimes they're more one than the other. So, you know, it depends on the crisis of faith. You know, there are times emotionally where I've struggled in my life where the intellectual answers aren't always answers that I need to hear. You know, but there are intellectual questions, you know, the history of the Bible and, you know, do science and faith go together? And so those are more intellectual questions. So those tend to be more about reading and study and asking experts who are smarter than I am and you know, working those things out. Now, I think as far as emotional, certainly more reliance on the community and friends, family, mm-hmm. to walk through those things.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book, The Faithful, again, the Time magazine says about that, as a first-time novelist, Mr. Wire brings a combination of religion, suspense, and romance in a way that could be compared to authors such as John Grisham. And this is great, combined with extraordinary C.S. Lewis for prose. His writing style is beyond expectations. How good is that for your first-time novel?
Yeah, I kind of like that quote a lot.
I gather.
One of my favorites, you know? So he's one of my favorites. So being compared to him is always nice. Mm-hmm. I got to admit it. You know, it's funny that compared me to C.S. Lewis because, you know, the novel is certainly influenced by one of the Inklings, and it wasn't C.S. Lewis. Charles Williams, who's kind of the unknown Inkling. You know, you have C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien, who hung out together and did stuff. But actually, Charles Williams was kind of the emotional force behind their little writers group. And so, but he doesn't get a lot of play because a lot of his novels are very strange and bizarre. to the other way. So.
Well, yeah, C.S. Lewis is kind of too. I remember spending hours when I was a child. I had a closet that was built into a wall. It was an old pre-war built house that we lived in. And I was convinced, though, if I pressed hard enough, I'd pop through, you know, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I'd pop through the back there.
Right.
It never quite happened for me. But tell us a little bit about the book, because you do, it's been described by some as a religious horror. I mean, how does this, tell us about the book first, and then I'm going to ask you how it sits well with your fellow ministers.
Sure. You know, simply, I think it is, it's a ghost story. And, you know, it's about a minister who's in a crisis of faith, and his ex-fiancée gets murdered, and she begins to haunt him to try to figure out her murder. And, of course, this squares with his, doesn't really square with his crisis of faith in the supernatural, so he has to sort through this. And along the way, he meets, of course, you know, the love interest in the story, Jennifer, who's the police woman investigating the murder. And then an odd group of paranormal investigators led by a mysterious Anglican priest. So that probably sums it up as quickly as possible, I think.
Mm-hmm. How does it sit well with fellow ministers? Have you had any feedback, comments off anybody?
Well, you know, as far as the horror aspect of it, you know, I always point out that Stephen King has always said that traditional horror has the morality that would make a Puritan preacher smile. So
I haven't heard that quote before.
yeah. So, and a lot of traditional horror has a lot of religious themes. I mean, Dracula, Frankenstein, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, they're full of imagery there that's just rich in, you know, religious symbolism. So, you know, as far as my fellow ministers, I've had friends of mine who are ministers reading, you know, to make sure that I was being fair and my accurate, just so I didn't, you know, betray my own experience at times. And so, and all of them were agreed that I got things pretty accurately. So, you know, that was good. That was one of the first indicators I was onto something, onto something interesting, I think.
Mm. So as a writer, tell me, do you separate yourself out as a writer, as a minister? Do you compartmentalize all of that, or is it impossible to separate that?
Yeah, you know, I think when I sit down to write, I try to. You know, no one can really, as a writer, you're always telling a story that in some ways is a part of you. And so it's hard to separate yourself from that. But I think I do a pretty good job of making sure that that I'm telling the story, because if you're not careful, you can, especially as a minister writing a story, you can end up trying to write a sermon rather than a story. And you know, from the moment I started writing this book, I was trying to be very conscious of that.
Mm. So that's a good point. How did you avoid not turning this book into a sermon? what kind of steps did you put in as a writer to avoid that?
You know, I think it was, you know, I had to turn off. I had to turn off my preaching switch in my brain. That was one of them, and which was easy to do because I don't preach at a church anymore on Sunday morning. So it was easy to get back into writing mode, because writing is always different from the way we speak. And so making that transition was probably one. The other was just making sure, you know, the desire when I first started out with this book was I just wanted to write a ghost story that mm-hmm. would keep people up at night. And mm-hmm. so I made that my main focus, and I think that helped tremendously.
What do you want listeners to know about the book?
I think it's a good read. It's a book that you can read on the airplane. It's a good book you can read sitting by the fire. It's not it's heady, but it's not too heady. It's a good mix of drama and suspense and laughs, and at the same time getting you to think about the unseen world. So, you know, I've had friends tell me that kept them up for 3 nights straight reading it. So, you know, I think it's a page-turner for people to enjoy and read and like and get as much of it out of it as they want or need to.
Yeah. Now, I think you're coming this coming Friday to Seattle, correct? Friday, November 19th?
Yes.
This is what I have. Tell me if this is correct, yes. Jonathan. 2 to 4:30, you'll be at Barnes & Noble downtown, 600 Pine, which is on 600 Pine Suite. Street.
Yeah, that's
600.
Yeah, that's right. And then I'm also doing a talk on November 18th at Cascadia Community College in Bothell. That's how you say that, right? Bothell, Washington.
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock, I'll be talking about why does God create skeptics and doubters, and that's that's for the public. Anybody can come. So
okay.
I'll be at both locations.
Okay, and I'm assuming they can find that on your website, quick yes or no, because we're almost out of time.
Yes.
Yes, okay, and your website is jonathanwire.com. It's Jonathan with A's at the end, and Wire is W-E-Y-E-R.com. You can always contact me if you miss that. I want to thank you for being with us today, Jonathan, and wish you all the best with your book.
Hey, Vicky, thank you so much for having me.
Sure. And again, Jonathan Wire's book is called The Faithful. It's described as a John Grisham C.S. Lewis mashup, a religious horror genre. And again, his website, jonathanwire.com. You can find me at conversationslive.net. Be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. And I really enjoyed meeting all of you who came down over the weekend. Thanks so much. It was great to see you.